The Capital Investment Committee hearing for March 20th is called to order. Members, we don't have a quorum, so we'll move straight to presentation. And for everyone who's here today, you've been allotted 5 minutes with one testifier per bill and another testifier invited for technical support. So first up, we have Representative Kraft. Please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. It's great to be here. I'm really excited to bring this Cedar Lake Road and Louisiana Avenue project in St. Louis Park before you. Before being elected to the legislature, I served on St. Louis Park City Council, so I've been hearing about this project for several years and participated in even shaping its direction. This is a critical intersection in St. Louis Park, not only for our citizens, but because these roads are key north-south and east-west connectors to other communities. Auto traffic on these roads today is 60% or more from outside of St. Louis Park. The biking infrastructure being added will provide a direct connection to the North Cedar Lake Trail for users in the western suburbs. St. Louis Park adopted a youth-initiated and citywide climate action plan in 2018 that still has the most aggressive goals for a city in Minnesota. Climate action is one of the lenses that SLP city government and city council applies to all its work, and this project is no different. With a roundabout at a key intersection to improve traffic flow and reduce idling, traffic calming measures to make it safer and more comfortable for those in and out of cars, pullouts for bus transit, and new bike infrastructure as previously discussed, this project fits well within St. Louis Park's and Hennepin County's long-term vision around transportation and climate change. We're requesting $16.6 million, which is about 57% of the cost of the project. And with that, I will turn it over to my testifier, Mayor Jake Spano, to tell you more about the project.
Welcome, Mayor. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Chair. Committee members, my name is Jake Spano. I'm the mayor of St. Louis Park, Minnesota. Representative Kraft asked me to keep my remarks to 30 minutes. I promise I'll do that. I'm kidding for everybody. I want to just provide a little bit extra granularity to the comments that Representative Kraft shared with all of you. Most of you probably don't need to know or be told that drink, drive, and flush, the sort of core services that cities provide to make sure that cities are thriving and healthy, are really at the center of all of our work. This is one of those in being that it is a drive project. As Representative Kraft pointed out, there are regional destinations all up and down Cedar Lake Road, but not just Cedar Lake Road, because Minnetonka Boulevard and other roads feed into Cedar Lake Road. So you have faith-based communities like Wat Pram Wat Shiratyan, the JCC, Bethel Synagogue, and Benilde St. Margaret's on one end. You have economic nodes like the West End, which has office, retail, and entertainment centers on it. You have city amenities, including parks, as well as a lot of residential properties. So there are a great number of people and entities, whether they live in St. Louis Park or not, who benefit from this infrastructure. And that's why we're here in front of you. And if you are curious about whether or not it is a regional project, you can just know that this used to be a county road, and it was given to the city for its maintenance and upkeep. And I know all of you hear stories all the time about municipal state aid and the work that needs to happen. We have in St. Louis Park about $11 million worth of MSA work that needs to be done this year. We received $1.4 million from the state. So we have over $100 million worth of total project needs. If we look at the complete picture, this represents just about 1.5% of that. So or at least our allocation for MSA represents about 1.5% of that. So this is, we feel, an opportunity for the state to step forward as a partner in a project that spans the region in the West Metro and provides a connection for folks that live both in Minneapolis, St. Louis Park, Golden Valley, Minnetonka, Hopkins, and cities all along the way. So with that, happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mayor. Seeing no questions, closing comments, Representative Kraft.
Yeah, I think, as the mayor said, I think this is a great project, consistent with what we need with climate vision and also with being a strong regional perspective. So I'd appreciate your support.
Thank you, Representative Kraft. Next on the agenda, House File 2366, Representative Wolgamott. Welcome, Representative. Please proceed.
Well, good afternoon, Chair Lee and fellow members of the Capital Investment Committee. I am honored and excited to present to you today House File 2366. Mr. Chair, I'm bringing this bill forward because rural communities across Minnesota are facing a growing shortage of healthcare providers, which leads to reduced services at local hospitals, longer wait times for appointments, and having to travel further for treatment. Mr. Chair, studies have shown that training physicians in rural communities helps recruit them to stay and practice in these areas. That's why we're bringing forward House File 2366, to create a collaboration between CentraCare and the University of Minnesota to focus on training more rural medical providers. This bill provides $17.9 million in GO bonds for a grant via deed to the City of St. Cloud to design, construct, furnish, and equip renovations for University of Minnesota campus on the CentraCare Healthcare System campus in St. Cloud. That's the bill, Mr. Chair, and I have a testifier with me who can provide further information to you about the importance of House File 2366.
Welcome. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Mr. Chair, I'm Mike Blair. I'm the Chief Financial Officer at CentraCare. CentraCare is a 9-hospital health system. We serve central and western Minnesota. We serve over 900,000 rural Minnesotans. As Representative Wolgamott mentioned, we have a health care access crisis in rural America. And I'll just share some statistics with you. So 20% of Americans live in rural areas, but only 11% of physicians practice in those areas. And only 4% of incoming medical students are coming from rural areas. Here, specific to the state of Minnesota, the median age of a physician practicing in rural Minnesota is 58. And one-third plan to leave the profession within 5 years. We have a healthcare access crisis already, and it will get worse. But CentraCare is committed to doing something about this, and we are working in collaboration with the University of Minnesota Medical School to open a campus in St. Cloud. The intent of this campus is we will attract, we will recruit, we will educate, and we will train physicians who will go on to practice in rural Minnesota. CentraCare will also contribute to this facility. We are estimating a cost of $17.9 million. We will contribute a facility that was built in 2012, costing over $10 million. It is located adjacent to our ambulatory center and is an ideal spot for educating and training physicians in the future. And with that, Mr. Chair, I will open up for any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Blair. So you're saying that CentraCare will be providing the, do you have a current hospital right now that you'll be providing to the University of Minnesota?
We have the we have an administrative facility that's adjacent to our ambulatory site, which is just down the road from our tertiary hospital in St. Cloud. We will contribute that facility. And then it will cost approximately $17.9 million to refurbish it and to create a medical school there.
And then maybe Representative Wolgamott or Mr. Blair, who will be the owner of this facility? Would it be the City of St. Cloud, who this grant is to, or the University of Minnesota?
Go ahead. Oh, yep. Our intent with that facility is that we will do a ground lease for that if that facilitates the bonds for it. But it will be a CentraCare facility.
Members, any additional questions? Representative Scraba.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So the students are going to be members of the University of Minnesota?
Mr. Blair.
Yes, they will be members of the University of Minnesota. A little background information. This will be a regional campus of the University of Minnesota Medical School. We did do some estimations of what it would take to get accreditation if we did not do it with the university. We expect that would take more than 10 years. Fortunately, we can do it as a regional branch of the university, and we will get accreditation much sooner, expecting to get accreditation within 18 months.
Representative Scraba.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That's enough. That's good.
And then do we have anybody from the University of Minnesota here?
Yeah.
We'll follow up with them offline. Thank you. Thank you, Representative Wolgamott.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Oh, no. Mr. Chair, thank you for the opportunity to present House File 2366. Let's invest in the next generation of Greater Minnesota healthcare providers. Please include House File 2366 in our next bonding bill package. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Wolgamott. Next on the agenda, Chair Liebling, House File 2339. And then, Chair Liebling, I understand that you have a DE amendment. Can you reference that for us and then proceed?
Yes, I do, Mr. Chair. Thank you for hearing the bill today. So we have the DE1 amendment. So I do want to say that this is a project that helps to address the shortage of the healthcare workforce. And it does it pretty quickly and directly. So the group that is coming with the proposal is a nonprofit in Rochester. And we don't have a lobbyist working with us, so we're working with the CA, Jenny Nash, has been very kind in giving me guidance, and we've been, so it's been a little bit of an iterative process. So we actually have two related bills, one of which is now in the Workforce Committee with the non-bondable costs. What is before you in the amendment is just a more fleshed out version of the same bill with the same amount of money in it as the original bill.
So, thank you, Chair. Please proceed with your presentation.
All right. So anyway, thank you, Mr. Chair. I really, as I said, workforce issues are really severe, as you just heard in the previous bill. But this is a bill that's about training all kinds of workforce for the healthcare field. And it's a very important project because it's being run and centered in a nonprofit. It's a very grassroots project. And so I'm going to turn it over now to my testifier, Julie Nagin from GRAUC. She's the executive director, to explain more about the project.
Welcome, director. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Hello. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Julie Nagin. I'm the executive director of Greater Rochester Advocates for Universities and Colleges, better known in the Rochester area as GRAUC. GRAUC is a nonprofit that has linked education providers with employers to advocate and promote a skilled workforce for southeastern Minnesota for the past 36 years. In 2020, as a neutral organization, GRAUC was asked to unite public and private educational institutions, employers, and experts in design and technology with a goal of establishing a simulation center to upskill the current healthcare workforce and to prepare the future healthcare workforce. Since 2020, when the Simulation Collaborative was formed, we have completed a needs analysis, a business and governance plan, and a co-design process to address equity, inclusion, and diversity. I must say I'm particularly proud of the healthcare professionals, the diverse healthcare professionals from the Rochester area who were the co-designers on this project. Not only did they address issues relating to their ethnic groups, their religions, but as a group, they strongly came out in favor of building a curriculum and training healthcare employees in the best ways and most effective ways to work with the LGBTQ community. And I'm very proud of them. We are hoping not only to have that curriculum available to our healthcare workers, but also make it available to other simulation centers around the state. We've also explored curriculum, space design, technology, and possible locations. We urge you to make an investment in the Simulation Center for Southeastern Minnesota and to partner with us to train and prepare our nurses and other healthcare professionals who serve patients now and in the future. Thank you.
So you know, questions, Chair Liebling, any closing comments?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. So I don't know how familiar folks are with the simulation center concept. This is something that does happen now, but this is how it helps to accelerate the training of healthcare professionals, not just nurses, but at all levels, by allowing folks to practice in a simulation setting. So this is not only for nurses, it's for everyone all up and down the hierarchy of healthcare, if you will. So that's why it's important that it's centered with GRAUC, because it's, and I think you might have a letter from Hawthorne Adult Education. They train a lot of, you know, some of this is bringing people into the workforce for the very first time, giving them an opportunity to practice without real patients, but being able to hone their skills and accelerate their training. So it has a really, it's a very important kind of missing link for healthcare, and could be very important for the future of the state in terms of getting more people into healthcare that we desperately need.
Chair Liebling, we do have a question for you. Representative Scrabble.
Thank you, Chair. Sorry I didn't get you fast enough. Are there other hospitals or centers that have simulators?
Director or Chair?
Yes, there are. Mayo Clinic has one very large center and a smaller center at St. Mary's Hospital. that serve mainly of their healthcare staff, particularly their doctors and medical students, but also some of their health, their nursing staff. There are small center, there's a small center at RCTC that is at or beyond capacity, as also a very small center for Winona State. Both of those centers are small, and it was actually Winona State who came to us and said, we need a center not just for Winona State, not just for RCTC. We need a center that serves all the nursing professionals who are being trained in Rochester, because we don't have space for them. And one center that is extremely high-tech. We have Mayo Clinic staff from the Sim Center helping us plan the current technology and also looking to future technologies to serve not only public universities, but private colleges and universities, K-12s, and adult education.
Representative Scrabble.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So the Mayo doesn't have space for people to come and use, like time slots available?
That is correct.
Director.
All right, thank you, Chair.
Yeah, and Mr. Chair, so this is not really to serve Mayo Clinic as such. Mayo kind of has its own thing. This is for the rest of the community, as you heard from Ms. Nigan. This is, you know, much more broadly needed. And, you know, Mayo just doesn't have the excess capacity to be letting everybody come in and use their facility.
Thank you, Chair Liebley. Next on the agenda, House File 2580. Chair Gomez. Welcome. Please proceed, Chair Gomez.
Thank you so much, Chair Lee, and members of the committee for hearing House File 2580 and for a chance to share one of the creative and community gems of my district with you all. So House File 2580 is for Pillsbury Creative Commons. It's a project of Pillsbury United Communities, which is a multidimensional nonprofit located in Minneapolis that has statewide, regional, and national impact. So Pillsbury House and Theater is located on 35th and Chicago, which means it's three blocks from George Floyd Square, five blocks from Lake Street. It is sort of a really unassuming building. Like, if you drove by it, you might not even notice it was there. but they do so many things in our community. They both act as, you know, I don't know how to describe it exactly. It's sort of a creative home for so many artists who live in the South Minneapolis area. And it also provides a lot of social services to the community. So there's a child care center there. There's day programs for adults with disabilities. There's a bike shop. There's a mechanic training program for youth who are houseless. They feed people. And there's also a theater, and there are art classes, and there are all of these ways that Pillsbury House moves resource into the creative community in the immediate area that I personally have benefited from over many years. So the vision here is a real expansion and opening up of this of Pillsbury House Theater and really transforming it into a technical arts training center and a full planned out creative campus. It'll be home to a world-class theater and will serve and support a lot of community arts and media initiatives, including an expansion for our beloved local low-power FM radio station, KRSM. this is an opportunity for the state to make an investment in a really dynamic and incredible organization. And just for some context, to my left is Janata Petras-Nasa, who is like an award-winning artist, multidisciplinary artist and author, and we went to high school together, and she was my class president, and, you know, so it's like this, I just think it's sort of this testament to how rooted in community this organization is, that we both sort of living in the neighborhood for 25 years and we're still circling around it. So I just would turn it over to my testifiers. Thank you so much to the members of the committee.
Welcome. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Gratitude. Thank you, Chair Lee, and to the investment committee members. Thank you very much for this time today. My name is Signe Haraday. I also want to say thank you, Chair Gomez. It means a lot to hear you speak from the heart. But I want to set the stage. We are on the cusp of a catastrophe. In a society where people don't look the same, don't move the same way, don't think the same, we can't see and we can't hear each other. You're politicians. You know all about this. So how do we have a functioning society or democracy? You're hearing compelling testimony from across the strait about real need, roads, bridges, clean water. I'm here to talk to you about a real need that undergirds our ability to solve problems, heal trauma, and build equitable communities. Where do people go to learn about each other, to cultivate empathy, to activate their creativity, to dream the world they want to see and make? They come to Pillsbury House and Theater, KRSM Radio, and Full Cycle. We are meeting the void left by countless lost organizations. PUC is seeking appropriation for phase two of the Pillsbury Creative Commons. More information in the materials in front of you. Phase one is already funded with a mix of both public and private dollars. We expect to complete phase one construction at the end of next year. The Wallace Foundation, in fact, has committed $3.7 million over 5 years to our expansion to help build not just the space, but the human and programmatic infrastructure necessary. We continue to have statewide impact. Technology and creativity shape all of our lives. There is a workforce behind every performance, every conference venue, and Minnesotans deserve to have access to that creative economy. Representative Erdahl's Uprising employed many creatives. Our training program would help to create technicians ready for work like on Erdahl's film. We want to be ready for the next generation. Training is possible, and we will serve 100 apprentices annually to help make them ready. The heart of the commons is a village space where community can gather. We can co-create the best solutions for our toughest problems. We can knit the fabric of our community locally and across the state. With 50,000 community members served annually, we welcome your participation and support. Thank you, Chair.
And then are you going to testify too?
Yeah.
I'll give you a minute and then we have to move on to another testimony.
Yeah, that's fine.
Please identify yourself and proceed.
My name is Janata Petrus-Nassa. Mr. Chair?
Yep, please proceed.
So I started my relationship with Pillsbury House 36 years ago when I was 4 years old in the daycare. And while my mom was attending school at MCTC and cooking, she would drop us off. And little did I know that for the next 36 years, I would have a relationship with this place as an artist and also as a person being served by this community space. Over the years, my mom has gone to Pillsbury House for acupuncture, for counseling. She has done her catering work out of there as well. Me and her have collaborated where I had her perform in one of my pieces there and cater food as a part of the performance. I feel like as a child, places that we grow up in feel like palaces that, you know, we can grow infinitely within. But as we know that the beautiful impact that this place is having has outgrown that space. I feel like in the uprising, there was such a huge gap that Pillsbury House fed by literally feeding people as well as holding the heartbeat of artistry within South Minneapolis that is swiftly gentrifying. And when spaces are gentrified, BIPOC folks can't stay in there, artists can't stay in these places. And so much of South Minneapolis's identity is a enclave for artistry and community people to be entangled with it. So, any way y'all could continue to resource and blossom this place would be infinitely impactful.
Thank you. Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Ms. Chair, and Ms. Haraday, thank you for the mention there of my little project that I've got going on. But I will just say we had 150 Minnesotans involved. Fortunately, most of them were volunteers.
So nice
we didn't, although we did generate some money for the economy. And don't read anything into my question. I'm just curious. How many theaters are there in Minneapolis? Do you know?
Director Haraday.
Chair Lee, thank you, Representative, for that question. It's actually a changing number. We have lost more than 15 theaters in the last 10 years in the Twin Cities, so it's a little bit difficult to give you an actual number. And because theaters are organized in multiple different ways, I know that you'll hear testimony from other organizations that have multiple theaters inside of their work as well. They're not all categorized in the same way.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Ms. Chair. And Ms. Herdig, could you just kind of throw out a rough number of how many still are in existence?
Director Herdig.
Chair. Representative, absolutely. I would say approximately 25 professional theaters.
Representative Dahl.
Thank you, Ms. Chair. That's my question.
Chair Gomez, closing comments.
Just my gratitude to the committee for the time today, and we appreciate your consideration of this project. It's really important to my community.
Thank you, Chair Gomez. Next on the agenda, House File 71, Representative Frazier. Welcome. Please proceed, Representative Frazier.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I'm here today to present House File 71. House File 71 is requesting funding for the replacement of the main pool of the Crystal Cove Aquatic Center. I'll be brief because I have two excellent testifiers here to talk about in more detail about why this is important for our community. The Crystal Cove Aquatic Center provides valuable life-saving swim lessons to many of the young people and adults within our community. And what we understand after a study is that if we don't replace the main pool, we are in danger of losing the Crystal Cove Aquatic Center. So I will leave it there because I have, like I said, great testifiers, the city manager here and the director of recreations to speak more in detail about the importance of this facility for our community.
Welcome. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Mr. Chair, my name is Adam Bell. I'm the city manager for the city of Crystal. And with me is John Elholm, who's the recreation director. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you for giving us the opportunity to come speak to this in support of this funding request. The Crystal Cove Aquatic Center was built 55 years ago, and as the representative outlined, it plays a very critical role in providing an affordable water safety resource, as well as a refuge from Minnesota's warm summers, as short as they are. Back in 2005, the city did a bond referendum and replaced two-thirds of the pool, but unfortunately, due to the cost, we did not have sufficient funding for that. Fast forward to now, the main portion of the pool is at well beyond its life expectancy, and the city hired a consultant. It needs to be replaced. The new funding that we need is well beyond what the city can afford. We do have $3 million in our capital improvement plan that we are providing, and we're looking for supplemental funding. As the committee may know, drowning is a leading source of death and injury in children, and the benefit of learning how to swim and having access to water facilities in an inner tier suburb is very critical. 30% of the population in Crystal alone is non-white. Minorities actually have a higher rate of death. The Crystal Pool is a regional asset, though. It over 60% of our patrons and our swimming lesson customers are from outside of Crystal. The importance of this, I can't. If the funding is not received, then the city will be forced to not being able to continue in our previous investment and provide this resource. We would have to close the pool and demolish it, which I don't think anybody in the community would like. All the public surveys that we've done, the city of Crystal is very supportive of this. 85% to 95% support this. But it is a broader resource to the broader community. So I thank you for your time, and I'm happy to answer any questions, Mr. Chair.
Representative Scraba.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Is this an indoor pool or an outdoor pool?
Mr. Bill.
Mr. Chair, Representative, this is an outdoor pool. The Aquatic Center has multiple splash areas. That is a zero entry area, as well as the main pool, which is what this is for. There are also water slides, but it is an outdoor pool.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Closing comments, Representative Frazier.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Mr. Bell, for your comments and sharing those details. I'll just say this is an important project for my community. I grew up in an area that did not have access to these type of facilities, so I understand the importance for young people and also for adults that need access to learn a valuable life-saving lesson to swim and have refuge away from some of our hot summers here in Minnesota, albeit short. I appreciate the support of the committee. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Frazier. Next on the agenda, House File 1035, Representative Anderson. Welcome, Representative Anderson. Please proceed.
Mr. Chair, welcome. Thanks for my welcome to the committee. House File 1065-35 on behalf of the small city of Beardsley in western Minnesota. They used to be the Beardsley Mustangs, but today they're part of a multi-town basketball team, the Border West Buccaneers. They're in the State Boys Basketball Tournament beginning on Wednesday. Anyway, the picture you're seeing is what can happen when a drainage system has what's called a blowout. It's caused by tile separating, and you get erosion, dirt being sucked down inside the tile, and you have these 15-foot-wide holes in your field. They really can eat up a tractor in a quick hurry, so they're not a good thing to have. This is a project necessitated by an area around Beardsley called Dry Lake, but in a wet winter like we're experiencing again, there's concerns about this dry area depression filling up with melted snow and flooding the city or town of Beardsley. Madam or Mr. Chair, there's a testifier, the mayor of Beardsley, who would like to address the committee and talk about the project.
Welcome, Mayor Holtz. Please identify yourself and proceed. You're on mute right now if you're speaking.
I'm sorry. I'm Kayla Holtz, and I'm the mayor of Beardsley, and I want to thank you guys for the time to allow me to speak a little bit here. And I am here to ask for the support for this Dry Lake project. I was born and raised in Beardsley, Minnesota, and like Mr. Anderson was saying, it is a very small town. We are talking a town of 218 people, to be exact, and we have to co-op with four different schools to just compete in basketball, and we are on our way to the state basketball tournament this week. But it is my choice to, after a short time of a leave, to come back and raise my son in this great community that I have called home. In 1997, our homes were actually devastated by a flood that significantly impacted our entire area. Flooding is something that is extremely foreign to us because in Beardsley, we were actually founded on a gravel pit. With that, obviously, when it floods and the water's going out, it seeps in. It doesn't go outwards. So therefore, it's hard to know when it's flooding until it's too late. And our basements all significantly were damaged because of this. And due to that, FEMA had stepped in and they have installed a control structure with an outfall of the pipeline that will help dry up and extinguish some of the water from the Dry Lake project. This runs 2.5 miles long. The city of Beardsley has assumed the responsibility of it because we actually own the lake. We don't own the land around it, but we own the lake. So some would think that this project would be one that would last a lifetime, being said it was done in 1997. However, that's not the case. We were brought concerns about 4 years ago, which at that time the local watershed was working on a plan to help us with the financing of it and try to get some funding available for it to cover the cost of this project because it will fall on the city of Beardsley. Like I said, Beardsley is 216 people. The primary estimates that were done is absolutely heartbreaking to our city. Our city would be assessed $7,500 per household on taxes to fund this project. That simply cannot happen. It is expected of our community, and our community will absolutely fall victim, and Beardsley will no longer remain as a town. Beardsley alone cannot afford $2.5 million to fund this project that we are asking, nor can our residents, who, like most, are elderly and living on a fixed income. To afford this is astronomical. I can't even fathom $2.5 million. But this will completely fall as a hardship on our town and our community and my people. We have limped along for 4 years because no funding has been available, but now more than ever, Beardsley absolutely needs this. Last year, in 2022, Mr. Anderson had given you guys pictures. Those were two sinkholes that we were well aware of. Two. This year, we have experienced almost as much snowfall as 1997. To say that we are devastated with the snowfall out here and that we are nervous about the flooding that is going to occur when it starts melting is an understatement. Imagine going to work in your field, whether it's harvest or planting, and you come across that sinkhole. I know the feeling because it actually is a neighbor's field of mine. I've seen it firsthand. It's scary. It's unsafe. Unfortunately, this is what we've experienced. So I ask you, please support the funding for the Beardsley Dry Lake Project because we know what's going to happen. Our sewer ponds are already experiencing the seepage of all of this excess water. Our equipment is working twice as hard as it should, making us make repairs to the equipment that shouldn't have to happen right now. I truly do fear for my community and what is to come if this bond for Beardsley does not get passed. So I ask you for your vote for the Beardsley Dry Lake Project. Thank you for your time and consideration.
Thank you, Mayor. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Anderson. What is the benefited area for the drainage? How large is the benefited area for this drainage system?
Representative Anderson.
It's several hundred acres. The city itself, I think, owns 77% of the affected area. There are a couple of farm fields, and I'm guessing it's probably 600 to 700 acres, but I'm not totally sure on that.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Anderson. So the 7,500 she's talking about is the cost to the homes within the city, and then there would also be cost to the benefited acreage of the agricultural land. Is that correct?
Representative Anderson.
Yeah, I assume that $7,000 cost would represent 77% of the total cost of the project, and the farmers would be assessed the remainder.
Representative Anderson. And do we know how much that is? Representative Anderson.
They had an estimate done a little over a year and a half ago, and it was about $2 million. So we're estimating now with inflation about $2.5 million. It's a fairly large pipe, but it was installed, well, when you get gaps like this in the pipe, and the pipe is sinking, so it's not working correctly at all. So that's the best estimate they could come up with.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I empathize, Representative Anderson, and I've seen sinkholes like this too. I'm just worried about the precedent. If we fix one, then how do we make this work where it's specific, and maybe there's some other approaches here I'd be willing to work with you on it to try to figure out a way.
Representative Anderson.
Mr. Chair, just to fill in the blanks, like you do an oral amendment to put the cost of $2.5 million in the amendment to 10.35 or 10.35, and that would be my closing statement, Mr. Chair.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and to the mayor. If you did not get the $2.5 million in state bonding to take care of this, what would you do? How would you be able to do this?
Mayor Holtz.
The watershed has said that they will potentially push off any repairs that are needed until we can get funding because they know our city cannot afford $2.5 million for this.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Ms. Chair and Madam Mayor. So you would basically just endure until the state came through with something.
Mayor Holtz.
That is correct, or we have to try and find funding elsewhere. And to allude on that a little bit more, we have already pushed this project out 4 years since we have first learned about the problems. And 4 years ago, we did not have sinkholes, and now we do.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Madam Mayor, did you ever think of changing the name of Dry Lake since it floods?
Mayor Holtz.
I think that'd be a fantastic idea now that we've experienced this twice in my lifetime.
Representative Anderson, quick closing comments.
We could call it Lake Erdahl if it would help. Yeah, just closing comments, Mr. Chair. I was out in that area yesterday, and in the 96-97, they estimated the water content of the snowpack at about 7 inches. Today, or as of yesterday, they're talking over 5 inches. So we're looking at another possible flooding situation for our areas of western Minnesota. So we'd appreciate your help in looking favorably on House File 1035.
Thank you, Representative Anderson. Next on the agenda, House File 2808, Representative Lizgar. Please proceed. Good afternoon, Chair and members. Thank you for the opportunity to present House File 2808. In 2020, the legislature did approve a $9.5 million for much-needed new public safety facility in Virginia. But due to inflation and supply chain issues, we are requesting $2 million, and I have the mayor of Virginia with me, Larry Covey. Welcome, Mayor. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Thank you. Mr. Chair and members of the committee, my name is Larry Cuffey, Jr. I'm the mayor of the city of Virginia, Minnesota. And as thank you, Representative Lizagar, for sponsoring this bill at this capital investment hearing. The city of Virginia is requesting this $2 million basically for the inflationary costs associated with this facility. When we received the bonding in $9.5 million in 2019-2020, we had our plans and specs in place. The public safety building itself and all the facilities, including FF&E, was estimated to be based on our project cost at $25 million. Because of the inflationary costs associated with this, our actually project costs, which is for FF&E, labor costs, cost for materials, and cost for transportation fees, has ballooned to $31.1 million. We've cobbled together as much funding as we could with respect to this building to keep the integrity going on. And the reason that we really need this additional funding is to build this regional public safety facility. It's a regional approach to things. We operate an ambulance service of six ambulances, 640 square miles. This facility is going to house not only a regional training facility, but house those six ambulances, which we have advanced life support. It also houses our USAR team, our urban search and rescue team, is one of two in the state of Minnesota. And we also ensure that our police department law enforcement entity will be there as well. And so there'll be a whole training component involved in that. And the cost of B3 compliance with the state of Minnesota has significantly increased as well. So we're looking from a $25 million to $31.1 million. And we were able to cobble together, like I said, the additional funding for that. But we needed the additional $2 million to bring us over the top. And so we're here today and asking for this moving forward. And just as a note, our fire facility right now, they're operating on a building that was built in 1895. And it was only remodeled at one time. It doesn't have the sprinkler system. It doesn't have the ADA compliance. We don't have an opportunity for people to come in to report any emergency circumstances. It is completely dysfunctional, and we're storing equipment in other places within the city. And we had to convert a closet and another bathroom to accommodate some of our employees moving forward as our staff grew to 38 full-time staff, including ALS people. So I think that's all I need to say. I just want one more comment from me. We have a mutual aid agreement with communities all over that do not provide ALS service. We go all the way up. We have a mutual aid agreement with Ely. It is imperative that we get this $2 million. We want to start construction, and it'll accomplish three things. One, it's going to provide emergency response anywhere in the city of Virginia within 6 minutes, which is critical. It also, the building where it's going to go is neighborhood revitalization and blight remediation. So thank you very much. I'll stand for questions, please.
Thank you, Mayor. Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Jeez. I don't know why I keep doing that.
Sorry.
Mr. Chair. The Mayor, Representative Lizagar, could answer that. So this is primarily a training center, or what? Just if you could be specific, I mean, are you gonna? Is it a new fire hall? Or
it is
more specific, please.
Mayor,
Mr. Chair, Senator Riddle, thank you. Yes, it's a fire public safety facility, which includes police, fire, EMS, ALS services, urban rescue team, and all emergency responses. In addition to that, it also is part of a training facility for the regional fire departments and police to come and train at our facility.
Representative Dahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Is it a jail, too?
Mayor.
I'm sorry. I apologize. Mr. Chair, Senator Dahl, it is not a jail. We use a St. Louis County jail system.
Representative Dahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So we also have had a request from Hibbing for a training center there as well. I mean, are you going to be duplicating? You have defined areas where you would be training as opposed to Hibbing.
Yes, Mayor. I'm sorry, Mr. Chair, Senator Riddle. Yes, I understand Hibbing's requesting some money for that as well. We do have a mutual aid agreement with Hibbing. They're the only other service that a full-time service that provides advanced life support. I'm unaware of the services with respect to what they're requesting for the public safety facility. I know we've talked with some of their representatives about how we crafted our presentation to apply for bonding to the state of Minnesota. So we have members of our USAR team that's also members of the Hibbing Fire Department as well, and they provide an ALS service too. So I guess I don't have a good answer for you, Senator.
Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Could you define a little bit or explain a little bit more the money that was appropriated in 2020, what that does, nine plus million?
9.5 million, yes.
What did you get for that?
Well, it's going to be cover the costs associated with some of the with the blight remediation and neighborhood revitalization. That's a separate cost. It's basically for the building structure itself and the facilities, the furniture and fixtures, and equipment that's going into that facility. And it's the 9.5 million is for the primary construction of the facility that's going to provide the citizens of Virginia the ALS and the emergency public safety services that we need.
Chair Lozgar.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And to expand on that is it's location, location, location. So right now, their facility that they're currently using from the 1800s is downtown. This one's going to be up on the corridor of 53, giving access to all the communities, and that's why they're buying out that section of older homes and then placing it there strategically to service the area. I will say also that this facility, nothing against Hibbing or anything like that, this was in the works for a very, very long time. And if you look at geographically for where this is, it covers a much broader area.
Representative Dahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So just so we have it straight, this, what you're asking for here, the $2 million is going to be, is that in the same facility as the $9 million?
Chair Lozgar.
Mr. Chair and Representative Erdahl, that is correct. This is looking ahead and seeing a project that was expected to be $25 million go to $31 million. And anyone that knows where, from a funding source and why the city of Virginia, half their budget comes from local government aid is they don't have the wealth. And so when certain communities get hit, that's where the state of Minnesota, and that is what we do, is help these communities. And that $2 million is going to help offset those dollars that they are short.
Thank you, Chair. I'll take that as your closing
comments.
That was
my closing. Thank you so much.
Chair Hassan, the next two bills. First up, House File 1926. Welcome. Please proceed. Please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Good afternoon. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to present House File 1926, which is a $10 million appropriation to renovate an old building that's in the heart of South Minneapolis, the Bethany Community Center. The Bethany Community Center is a center that serves families, young people, seniors. It has been it has started as a recreational space. At 56 years?
Yes.
56 years ago, and now it has grown to serve the community. There's about roughly 32,000 residents of Minneapolis that get services from this building. It's an old building. It's polluting our air. I live in that neighborhood, and we came to ask some help from the state to get some funding to renovate that building. With that, Mr. Chair, I'll save you some time, and we have the president and CEO of Sabathany Community Center to just give us more details about this ask.
Welcome, Mr. President. Identify yourself and proceed.
Scott Reed. Thank you,
Chair Lee and representatives. We appreciate the time and thank you for authoring this bill. Sabathia is one of the oldest Black-founded and led nonprofits in Minnesota. We are located in South Minneapolis, just a few blocks from George Floyd Square. Over 150,000 people a year come through our doors looking to heal, celebrate, or to solve community concerns. Our mission is simple: provide people of all ages and cultures with essential resources that inspire them to improve their lives and to build a thriving community. This year alone, we distributed over 90,000 pounds of food through our food shelf, distributed over 3,800 pounds of clothing through our community clothing closet, and provided employment services to over 98 individuals from our community. However, I'm not here to talk about our services. I'm here to talk about one of our assets. You see, at Sabathia, we have three great assets. One is the people that we serve, great community. Our talented staff, and one, our and 100-year-old, 188,000 square foot building. For far too long, these three assets have been underinvested in. I'm here today to talk about our building and what it means to this region. We are known as the heart of Minneapolis because of our ability to do with the community and not to the community. And today, this heart needs a new transplant. Our 100-year-old building has two boilers known as Thelma and Louise, and 104 air conditioning units that cost us about $28,000 a month. And we pay $20,000 a year just to get those boilers up and going. That's $356,000 a year on an inefficient system that's leaving a carbon footprint in our community that has some of the highest asthma rates for children. In the state, we would rather spend $356,000 right in the wrongs of the economic, racial, social, and environmental injustices that have been inflicted in our community, from redlining to concentrating pollution to police brutality. This community has endured it all, and yet we still stand. We have a failing, antiquated, and polluting energy system that needs to be replaced by a renewable, low-carbon, job-creating, justice-centered energy system. This has been a three-year endeavor working with our incredible partners like Xcel Energy, CenterPoint, CEE, Darcy, Apex, City of Minneapolis, Hennepin County, and philanthropy organizations like the Ignite Foundation, all to lower our energy costs and to provide energy efficiency, all which affects our community. We have done the studies, we have the plan, we have the vision, we have the determination. Now we need the financial support. I don't come here today to ask for a handout, but to ask for an investment in this resilient community. Sabathia is putting on its own oxygen mask so we can continue to support the community and serve the 150,000 people a year that walks through the doors of Sabathia. What you decide here will determine what transformation can happen in this community and the impact it will have for generations to come. Thank you.
Thank you, President Redd. And so I see a letter of support here from Hennepin County, and then they mentioned that they will provide opportunities to grant and whatnot. Have they provided any financial support similar to some of the partners that have submitted letters here?
Not as of yet.
And are you anticipating any kind of financial support from them?
We're working on it. Yeah, we're working on it. Hopefully that will happen.
Okay. Yeah, we always like to see letters of support, but mostly financial support for any projects before us.
Mr. Chair, we're trying our best to find anybody who can help. This is a great project, and I live two blocks away from the Sabathia Community Center. That's where I go to vote. That's where I, go and help out with some of the community activities, such as the food shelf. It's a great investment, and it's a great investment to our community. Please support. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Hassan. Next on the agenda, House File 2207. Chair Hassan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's me again. House File 2207 is the Urban Indigenous Legacy Initiative funding The Urban Indigenous Legacy Initiative funding is a collective of 16 renewed Native American nonprofit organizations in the Twin Cities focused on issues ranging from healthcare to housing, workforce development to childcare that have provided our communities with powerful and effective services for more than two decades. These nonprofits are, many of them are in my district, but they also serve throughout the state. These nonprofits are in buildings that are crumbling, literally crumbling. Some of these buildings, when it rains, literally people would have to get out of their offices because it will be flooding in there. We're coming to ask for funding for this 16 organizations who are very critical to our community in South Minneapolis and in the great state of Minnesota. And with me, I have two great testifiers who will be very brief.
Welcome, please identify yourself and proceed.
Sure. Chair Lee, Dr. Joe Hobart, President and CEO of the American Indian OINC. Members of the committee, I just want to speak to this innovative collaboration, 16 Native American organizations seeking funding for 12 individualized projects. Along the way, our approach has been complimented as being innovative as well as sometimes perplexing. Oftentimes we hit questions like, why are we not pursuing individual requests or individual bills based on each individual organization? And the response is, our ways, as taught to us by our elders and by the stories of the ancient ones, have provided clear instructions to us that not only when the entire community benefits, all the people within the community will benefit as well. It is through their wisdom and their efforts, many of whom founded the very organizations that we all now work at, that a remarkable gift was bestowed upon us that inherited a legacy of resilience, hard work, survival, and most importantly, compassion. It is their legacy that has enabled our people to survive against incredible odds. In this way, it is only fitting and right for our organizations with the Urban Indigenous Legacy Initiative to come together in mutual support, aligned in a mutual effort on behalf of the entire community that we all serve. Only when we work together will we be able to produce the results that we desire for our people. To be clear, our collaboration is more than a request seeking funds for modern facilities. There have been inter-referrals between our organizations for decades, and in the near term, we will be endeavoring to formalize these referrals into an operational network. Therefore, the success of each of the organizations present within this collaboration is of equal value to our own. Their success ensures our success. It also ensures that our community will have better success for our clients, and they will have access to a continuum of services that address a multitude of barriers obstructing their way forwards towards financial independence and their ability to thrive. There's no secret that our people have been enduring historic disparities for generations, disparities that were laid bare and exacerbated during the COVID-19 pandemic. Our work has become ever more urgent. The very lives of our people depend on the nonprofits aligned in this collaboration to effectively do our jobs and provide the highest caliber services possible. Our need is now buildings, physical structures, modern facilities in which to continue this fight against inequity, disparity, and despair. Many of the organizations within this collaboration are housed in buildings that were constructed during the Franklin Roosevelt administration. And despite the decrepit nature of our homes, our organizations endeavor on and do so quite successfully, despite the hovels that our staff are housed in. We have no choice. Our people are in need. Our unprecedented ask is born of having to endure unprecedented times, and now we are before you as the state of Minnesota currently rests upon unprecedented resources. If there ever was a time to act, if there ever was an opportune moment in history to make our contribution to the legacy of our elders, it is now. So we have our support of our champions, including your colleague, Representative Hassan, here before you today, as well as the firm support of Governor Walz, who will be speaking at our rally tomorrow in the Capitol Rotunda, as well as the support of Lieutenant Governor Flanagan. As they have done, they have exemplified courage when stepping forward to help those most in need. I ask of this committee to share that same courage and support House File 2207. We welcome you to join us and add all of your voices, to add your contributions to this remarkable legacy of resilience, hard work, survival, and compassion. It was bestowed upon us by those who have come before, from Sitting Bull and Red Cloud on down to Clyde Bellecourt and Eddie Benton-Benet. Join us in leaving a legacy of triumph for those who are coming to us next. Wopula Tonka for this opportunity. Thank you very much.
Representative Erdoff.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just a little clarification here. Is this cash or bonding?
Dr. Hobart.
Chair Lee, members of the committee, Representative Erdahl, this is for cash. This is no GO bonds at all in this request.
All right. Thank you.
I'd like to introduce...
Mr. Chair, we have one more testifier and we'll keep it brief.
You have 1 minute. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Chair Lee and committee members. My name is Marissa Miyakonda Cummings. I'm the president and CEO of the Minnesota Indian Women's Resource Center and a citizen of the Omaha Tribe. I'm here today with 16 other urban Indian organizations, as you've heard, on behalf of a bill that exists as a result of the 1953 Federal Indian Termination and Relocation Act. These acts systematically moved American Indian people from their reservation communities to urban areas like Minneapolis. While urban Indian people have tribal citizenship, we are also citizens of the United States of America and your constituents. To mitigate the effects of historical and generational trauma and to affirm our cultural identities, American Indian people founded nonprofits like those we represent here today in order to support the needs of our people in culturally specific ways. We serve the citizens of over 120 tribal nations in the Twin Cities and throughout the state of Minnesota. Our community has been historically underfunded and has the highest negative social determinants of health, including healthcare, education, workforce development, homelessness, poverty, and more. But our plan is to address all these social determinants of health through a community-centered approach. Our organizations create an ecosystem of culturally specific support, and we need to holistically uplift all of us in this collaborative in order to drive the social impact for our community. Safe and functioning buildings will allow us to increase the number of clients served, generate more jobs, and reverse the negative disparities that exist. A social return on investment evaluates every dollar invested into resources and how that investment saves us money down the line. We are here because we are interested in upstream solutions. We are a collaborative of educated and innovative leaders here in the community and have data to support the incredible work that we do. However, we need safe and functional buildings to do that. So today, we ask you to look at this historical surplus and think of the consequences of the historic underfunding of our communities. We have done so much with so little for so long, but it doesn't have to be that way. You can make a monumental change in our community that will allow us to heal our people for generations to come, and you can be part of that solution by providing your support for House File 2207. We will home Wangle. Thank you all.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair Hassan. Next on the agenda, we have two bills for Chair Pawlowski. First up, House File 1129. Welcome. Please proceed, Chair Pawlowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House File 1129 comes to you as a result of the mini session held in Winona on October 2nd, 3rd, and 4th, 2019. This committee with Chair Mary Murphy held a hearing with the intent of analyzing the law enforcement needs of the Winona area. Since that time, the city of Winona has been studying the issue and has resolved what they want to do with their police and fire. And Mr. Chair, I have Mayor Scott Sherman, and he wishes to testify remotely.
Welcome, Mayor. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Good afternoon. My name is Scott Sherman. I am the mayor of the city of Winona, Minnesota. Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. Glad to be here this afternoon. Special thank you to Representative Pawlowski for sponsoring House File 1129 today. Winona is seeking funding for a regional public safety facility within the city of Winona. You'll hear throughout my testimony today that this will be truly a regional facility. The primary focus of this facility is joint training for fire, emergency management, and law enforcement services for all of Southeast Minnesota. In regard to emergency management and fire services, Winona would provide regional training based on our Tri-County Mutual Aid in Southeast Minnesota, which serves Winona, Houston, and Fillmore counties. In that training, we would specifically be looking at confined space training, high-level rescue, search and rescue, trench rescue, also community awareness and emergency response, specifically regarding rail, waterways, natural disaster emergency services for all of Southeast Minnesota. This includes train derailment, leaks, and hazmat for both CP Rail and Burlington Northern tracks that run through Winona. Also, with the potential and or the merger of CP and Kansas, we will be seeing increased rail traffic in the next few years here. Winona also, as you know, is located on the Mississippi River. We have a railroad that literally bifurcates our community, basically runs right down the middle of our town, primarily within residential areas, no buffer like East Palestine. Winona is the second largest port on the Mississippi River in Minnesota. The facility would also be preemptive regarding proposed legislation regarding the emergency medical services, regulatory board operations, and primary service areas. Winona's firefighters, all of our full-time firefighters are state level one instructors currently, and 90% of them are paramedics. Regarding law enforcement services, Winona would provide regional training for four other law enforcement agencies within Southeast Minnesota. Law enforcement agencies in Southeast Minnesota continue to train, for instance, requiring the assistance of specialized emergency response teams. Providing multi-jurisdictional training for active killer situations. Also, it would serve as a regional facility, allowing us to partner with Winona State University and other institutions of higher learning to enhance their training curriculum and assist with the recruitment of local students. A new building would also provide us with simulator training and trainings around mental and physical health for law enforcement officials, which, as you all know, is crucial at this point in time. The regional public facility will greatly improve the proper handling of hazardous materials associated with fire and law enforcement activities, such as when fentanyl is recovered in our Southeast Minnesota area and testing is required. The separation of staff victims of crimes and general public within the facility would also be enhanced. We would also have improved accessible public spaces for those needing law enforcement services. Currently, our city police force is 20 to 25% understaffed as it relates to our full-time normal officers out on the street. Normally, we have 38. Right now, we're floating at about 29 or 30 officers. Recruitment and retention are key focus for the areas of the city. We try to provide high-quality workspaces that can contribute to both recruitment and retention of those officers within the city of Winona. Winona is a regional center, and due to our location, Winona provides a wide variety of significant emergency and law enforcement services to all of Southeast Minnesota, up and down our Mississippi River corridor. This request will provide Southeast Minnesota with a regional training facility, up-to-date apparatus facility, and quality amenities for Southeast Minnesota's emergency service professionals who are performing high-stress services. I cannot emphasize enough that Winona is literally a regional hub for emergency management, law enforcement, and fire protection within the area. Thank you.
Mayor, I have a question for you. So do you have any other, when on the language here, so that you're going to partner with other public safety entities, do you have any state partners, and do you... how much do you charge them? I'm asking because I have had some conversation with some of our state law enforcement agencies, and they said that when we fund these regional training centers, oftentimes they charge our state law enforcement officers more than what they would charge other local folks.
Fire would be free. There is the potential for some income from some of these training opportunities, but as of now, we are not charging for those.
Thank you. Closing comments, Chair Pawlowski.
Mr. Chair, the city's been working on this since 2019, and I think they've done a good job.
Thank you. Chair Pawlowski, next on the agenda, House File 1827.
1827 also comes to you as a result of the mini session of 2019 in southeastern Minnesota. This is the further development of a trail. $2 million were appropriated through this committee in 2020 for the extension of the Riverfront Trail. However, they run into a snag, and they're asking for a $5 million appropriation to correct that. Mike Chikanowski, I believe, is here also to testify. He's the chair of the Winona Port Authority and also the founder and CEO of Winona Canoe and Kayak.
Welcome. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Mike Chikanowski. I was born in Winona, and over 55 years ago in school was the founder of Winona Canoe. I have approximately 70 workers in my plants and ship canoes and kayaks around the world. You've probably seen my Winona canoes and current design kayaks. I have been on the Winona Port Authority for 30 years and have been the president for 20. We oversee our river ports and foster economic development in Winona. For economic development, years ago, it was all about getting more jobs here. Now it's about getting more workers to move to Winona to fill the jobs that we have for them. About our Mississippi River Front Trail. Parks and trails are instrumental in Minnesota's economic output. They increase retail sales, support jobs, attract new residents and businesses, and boost property values. A University of Minnesota study has found every dollar invested in conserving natural lands nets a return of up to $4.40. Data is also supported by the American Planning Association. Workers and talent are attracted and retained. Retirees are attracted and retained. Real property values are positively affected. All of you know this because Minnesota has taken positive steps to invest in trails that serve regional centers like Winona. Over 45% of sales in Winona are from non-residents. Winona is a regional employer with companies like Fastenal, Winona Health, Windcraft, RTP Company, Bay State Milling, and Winona Canoe. Over 60 manufacturing companies in Winona help to employ the 17,000 workers that live or work in Winona. Our commercial port is only surpassed by Duluth and St. Paul. We moved last year in 2022, 1,072 barges. In addition to being an economic regional center, we are known as the outdoor hub of recreation in southeast Minnesota. We are the hub for hiking, climbing, biking, paddling, boating, and all things that are outdoor related. The proposed trail running the Mississippi along the Mississippi River in Winona has been in planning stages for years. It is a trail parallel to the Mississippi River, beginning at Levee Park and evidentially tying into trails within the region, including the Mississippi River Trail, that's MRT, and regional trails such as the Flyway Trail. The project will have an immediate economic development impact for Winona and the regional economy and will provide accessible routes along the riverfront for employees of our downtown, including Fastenal. They just invested into a $40 million new building to attract IT workers here. The new building was made to have bike storage, lockers, showers, and room for the 400 to 600 employees who are and will be working there. In addition, university students attending one of our three post-secondary institutions will use our trails. We are one of the few cities, especially regional centers, that do not have a path along the river which serves the region. Because Winona is home to three post-secondary educational institutions and has several significant religious institutions, much of our most valuable property is exempt from property taxes, over 30%. Well, we welcome these institutions. They present the community with unique financial challenges. The Mississippi River is priceless for the communities along its banks. The American Cruise Lines now stops here over 30 times during the summer months at the levee where the trail will begin. Funds were secured through state bonding to begin the project. Preliminary engineering has been paid for by the city and port, along with other investments, including City of Winona's improvements to the levee park of $2.5 million. The section of trail we are speaking about is highly industrialized, and studies by Mar Engineering and WHKS engineers evaluated at-grade crossings and connections and found conflicts with pedestrians because of trains, heavy truck traffic, and marina loading facilities. A bridge over this area would offer an accessible route for all users so visitors, students, and workers can enjoy and use this trail. We want to continue our journey to make sure that Winona is a place where kids want to live and come back to after college, a place where students want to come, a place where our workforce is attracted to live, and a place where visitors can enjoy Winona. Thank you, committee chair and committee members.
Chair Pawlowski, closing comments.
Thank you, and I hope you come to Winona to enjoy the trail.
Thank you, Chair. Next up, Representative Myers, House File 2461. Welcome, Representative Myers. Please proceed.
Thank you, Chair Lee and members. I'm here today presenting House File 2461. This is to provide funding for critical infrastructure for the city of Excelsior. This infrastructure will not only benefit the residents of the city, but it will also benefit the regional and statewide visitors that come to Excelsior every year. Excelsior is home to a very historic and popular commercial district, as well as the Commons Park, which is located on the shores of Lake Minnetonka. Excelsior is also listed on the National Registry for Historic Places and attracts tourists and visitors from all across Minnesota. I'm sure many of you have been there before. Today I have testifier council member Carone and city manager Luger to answer any questions.
Welcome, council member. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Chair Lee and members of the committee. I am Councilmember Jennifer Carone, and I'm here representing the mayor and full Excelsior City Council. I want to first thank Representative Myers for his leadership and support of the needs of Excelsior and his dedication to his district. As you've heard from Representative Myers, Excelsior is a regional destination for the state. We're drawing visitors to our Commons Park and our historic downtown, and they come year-round to our events. We are also the downtown for their surrounding communities, but we are quite small, less than 1 square mile, and 45% of the property in our city is property tax exempt. We have the Minnetonka Elementary School, one of the Minnetonka Elementary Schools, 7 churches, 2 large parks, and 1 small lake. We became even more well-known in the metro during the pandemic when people were seeking outdoor places to gather. Since then, we've continued to host large numbers of visitors, and it's particularly gratifying to see the diverse community served by our small town. We are pleased and proud to be a destination to Minnesotans. We are here today to ask for your help with our infrastructure needs. Excelsior is an old city, established in 1853. Fortunately, our water pipes are not quite that old, but they are 70 to 100-year-old pipes. They are made of iron, galvanized metal, and lead, and we are experiencing brown water, as you can see in the pictures on our fact sheet. Just last week, actually, we received another email from a very upset resident regarding the brown water coming from their taps. We experience water main breaks every year. Last year, we had 6. Our sanitary sewer pipes are clay tile and cracked, and they are an environmental risk to the lakes that surround our city. Those are Lake Minnetonka, Galpin Lake, and College Lake, which is fully within our boundaries. Our stormwater pipes are undersized and do not provide sufficient capacity for current climate precipitation events, which then causes localized flooding. We have contaminated soils throughout our city. All public infrastructure projects since 2017 have required removal of contaminated soils to designated landfill sites. This is a very expensive portion of our projects. However, addressing this contamination mitigates the risk of contamination of groundwater and flow through to Lake Minnetonka. Undertaking these infrastructure projects will, of course, also entail street reconstruction. About 15 years ago, Excelsior recognized that we had a responsibility to address long-deferred utility maintenance issues, so we developed a street and utility replacement plan. We have issued $22 million in bonds since 2010. That's a very significant number for a city of our size. We are now at the point where the debt levy and utility rate increases are unsustainable, and we need some help. We are respectfully asking for your support so that we can finish the work we began back in 2010. Thank you for your consideration, your service to our state, and your time today.
Thank you, Councilmember. Close comments, Representative Myers.
Yeah, so what I would say is, you know, from dining to shopping to pond hockey tournaments to skating to ice fishing to, you know, the dog sled events to boating, swimming, parks, and our historic downtown, Excelsior has something for every single person, no matter the time of the year. But with a population of about 2,300 people, it just doesn't have the wherewithal to fix this critical infrastructure. And so we're asking for your support today. Thanks.
Thank you, Representative Myers. Next on the agenda, Representative Kira, House File 188. Welcome, Representative Kira. Please proceed. you, Chair. I appreciate the opportunity to be here today to advocate for Chancata Trail Road funding. As you know, this is a county road turnback. It used to be County Road 47. The city acquired it as a turnback. Unfortunately, it didn't come with much of any funding. Actually, the county did put in a little bit of money. But this is a 100-year-old road. It's essentially a paved cow path. But as the community has grown, the capacity of this road has not. It's not safe, as you know from your bonding tour a couple years ago. And Chair, I remember you were there. I remember talking with you. Unfortunately, I think you just took all my attention. I didn't notice if anyone else was here. So those who were on the committee who were there, I apologize. But you saw firsthand the situation. There, it's located along, there's a brand new elementary school located on it. There's another one adjacent to it. It just has not kept up with the needs of the community in terms of capacity and safety. With me today is our city engineer and deputy public works director, Chris Labonte, and I'll turn it over to him.
Welcome, director. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Chair. I'm Chris Labonte, deputy public works director and city engineer for Plymouth. Want to start off by saying thank you to you for hearing us today, as well as including us on that 2021 bonding tour. As Representative Carroll mentioned, Chancata Trail, formerly known as 47, used to be designed for farm equipment and local traffic, but now serves a regional purpose in our area in supporting thousands of residents in Plymouth and our three neighboring communities, as well as a primary access for the Meadow Ridge School, which is a diverse elementary school that has over 750 students. Unfortunately, with the heavy traffic, it just lacks adequate safety measures for pedestrians, cyclists, and our motorized traffic. It has poor sight lines, sharp curves, limited sidewalks and trails, and averages 20 crashes a year. Safety is enough of a concern that many of the kindergartners at the school actually took this as an opportunity as part of their persuasive writing lesson, and I thought I might share one with the committee today, although I did fix some of the spelling. Dear County Road 47, we have a problem. Kids want to walk and ride their bikes to school on County Road 47, so we need some sidewalks and use less gas if we do. Please put sidewalk in. Please send a letter back. So with that, this project is designed to provide a regional benefit by addressing these critical safety issues and connecting people, including some neighborhoods with lower income families in the corridor, to the community parks and schools. And it does this through creating trails on both sides of the roadway corridor, providing safe crossings at major intersections with our parks, schools, including an underpass near the school. And it also corrects the roadway safety hazards resulting from those poor sight lines and dangerous curves. So with that, on behalf of the four communities adjacent to this roadway, as well as the current and future students of that school, I want to thank the committee for including part of our $20 million request in their bonding bill, and Representative Carroll for carrying this bill.
Thank you, Director. I'm just curious, as you turn this into a trail or whatnot, are there any safety or aspect that the road or trail has to abide by now? Speed limits, etc.
So, Chair, if I could take a stab at it before Mr. Labonte. It, the trail is perhaps a misnomer. It was a name change. It used to be County Road 47. So to honor the original inhabitants of the area, the Dakota, it was Chancata Trail was the name chosen by the council. So Chancata is a Dakota word, and trail just goes along with it. It's not, it used to be a trail, but it's not a trail now. So it's a name. Did you have any?
Representative Scraba.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So it's still a road with two trails alongside of it. And 1 second. The question I ask is, are there private property on either side of this road where the trails are?
Go ahead. Director?
Yep, Chair and Committee. It is a road, a four-mile corridor. There would be trails on both sides of that roadway, and it is fully developed private property on both sides, minus those parks and one farm.
Representative Scrabble.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you.
Close the comments. Representative Carroll.
Thank you very much, Chair and Committee. I'd appreciate your support for this. Ultimately, this is a public safety measure to improve this road, to make it safe, to right-size it, and get kids to and from school safely. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Carroll. Last of the agenda, Representative Ryer, House File 1296. Welcome, Representative Ryer. Please proceed.
Thank you, Chair Lee and members. We will be brief. I'm pleased to present House File 1296, it's Critical Access Dental Infrastructure Bill. I have spent a lot of time working on dental access issues, including expanding reimbursements, making other reforms. This bill goes at the needs for a place to provide care, a place that has the resources, the space, and the features that clinics need to be able to meet the needs of the Medicaid population. It proposes a grant and forgivable loan program for infrastructure investments, both the physical facility and equipment for critical access dental providers. It would help these high volume providers maintain and expand their capacity. We propose $20 million for fiscal year 2024. It's a one-time appropriation that would be available until June 2026. And now I would like to turn it over to my testifier to explain it further.
Welcome, Dr. Nelson. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Good afternoon, Chair Lee and committee members. Thank you for the opportunity to present today. My name is Dr. Siobhan Nelson. I'm a practicing general dentist and the dental director of community dental care. Community Dental Care is one of Minnesota's largest Medicaid dental providers. We provide comprehensive dental care at our five clinics located in Maplewood, East St. Paul, Rochester, Robbinsdale, and Buffalo, with about 100,000 patient visits a year, and about 85% of our patients are on some sort of medical assistance or public program. A key area that sets us apart is our strong commitment to diversity, equity, and inclusion, providing culturally competent care. The majority of our staff of 250 employees are of color and represent a very broad range of cultures and races, and we are proud to share that our employees speak collectively 34 different languages. Many of our patients face barriers to access inadequate dental care and have been impacted by long-term health inequities. Due to the shortage of providers willing or able to serve low-income populations, our patients often travel a great distance to receive care in our clinics. We serve patients each year in 63 out of the 87 counties in Minnesota. We are deeply grateful for the legislation passed in 2021 to improve reimbursement. Quite frankly, it helped us keep our doors open. Our clinics are full of patients. We have long wait lists of people waiting for treatment. And grants are how we expand access for people in need by adding capacity in terms of facility, equipment, and workforce. We ask you to support House File 1296 for Critical Access Dental Infrastructure Program to provide grants that allow us to expand and maintain our capacity to see patients with new equipment and expanded workforces. Your support will allow us to better serve our mission and provide culturally competent care to people in need. The Capital Infrastructure Grant Program will provide essential resources to CAD providers like us and provide a huge return on investment for the legislature as it looks for ways to increase access to dental care for Minnesotans on public programs. Thank you.
Representative Scrava.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Northern Dental Access, is this throughout the state or where are these located?
Dr. Nelson.
So Northern Dental Access is different than us, but they're also a CAD provider. We're located in the metro area, three locations in the metro, and then Buffalo and Rochester as well. But again, we serve our patients come from all over because they need a place.
Representative Scrava.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So the request is for you and your organization or for everybody here? I'm missing that.
Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Scrava, it is a network of critical access dental providers that's statewide. Dr. Nelson's representing one of them, but they are across the state.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And real quickly, I'm familiar with the clinic in Buffalo. I actually attended their opening this year. I think You provide a very valuable service for those who are otherwise very underserved.
Vice Chair Breyer, closing comments.
I appreciate your consideration. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Vice Chair Breyer. Members, that concludes our agenda for today. Before we go, Representative Erdahl, can I get a motion to approve the minutes for March 17th?
Mr. Chair, I move the minutes for March 17th.
Representative Erdahl moves the minutes for March 17th. Any discussion? Hearing none, those in favor say aye. Aye. Those opposed say nay. The motion prevails and the minutes for March 17th are approved. Members, the next hearing is on Wednesday, March 22nd. We'll be acting on House File 24. We will not be taking up any testimony as we have heard it, amended, and laid the bill over. This is the lead service line bill. Any amendments for the bill will be due by 1 p.m. tomorrow to the committee administrator. On Wednesday, we will continue to hear bills on an informational-only basis. The meeting is adjourned.
Are we meeting Friday at all?